Good morning. Welcome to the Second Court of Appeals. We have three cases on our docket this morning for oral argument, and I believe that our first case, Jane Doe versus Columbia North Hills Hospital subsidiary et al. Your counsel has appeared and announced the amount of time you would like to argue. So with that, I will have the clerk call the first case and we will proceed.
The court will now call Jane Doe versus Columbia North Hills Hospital. And may it please the court, Ms. Jane Smith to argue for the appellate, Ms. Nancy Patterson to argue for the appellate.
May it please the court and counsel, good morning. I am here on behalf of Jane Doe to ask the court to reverse the trial court's decision to send this case to arbitration. The evidence is clear that they did not establish that there was a written agreement that was signed pursuant to their policy, and the evidence is clear that there was not even notice to my client that she was to arbitrate her case. My client worked as a...
There was notice. She just denied receiving it, correct?
Correct. And that's where she would argue that there was notice. They are claiming that the notice is that she signed a piece of paper saying that there were some policies on an intranet, and that the fact that there were some policies on that intranet bound her to arbitrate her claims. However, that policy actually, she never knew about the policy. She provided an affidavit that said in the orientation when she went to work at North Hills Hospital that they never discussed arbitration. There was never any paperwork given to her that referenced arbitration. There was one document that indicated that that there was an intranet available and that she was to review that.
So basically, it's your position that just providing access to that information isn't sufficient.
That's one of my arguments. Providing access to that information isn't sufficient to bind my client, to establish a contract to arbitrate the case. Furthermore, even if the court were to find that that was sufficient to bind my client, their own policy indicates that the employee actually has to sign the agreement. That's contained in my appendix. But there's a provision where it indicates that they actually, that the employee, there's a line that says, I hereby agree to arbitrate my claims against the employer, and a line for her signature. And I would submit that even under their own policy that there was no meeting of the minds, there was no agreement to arbitrate. The best analogy, first of all, the Texas Supreme Court has told us in FedEx versus Dushman back in 1993 that employee handbooks, employee policies, unless there is a clear intent to establish a contract, a binding contract, that's not binding. And in that case, the Texas Supreme Court said that an employee could not sue FedEx for some protections that were set forth in the employee handbook, in the employee policies, that weren't a part of an exception to the employment at will doctrine. And by per curiam opinion, the Texas Supreme Court reversed a decision to allow that case to go to the jury and render judgment for the employer. As Dean Frank Newton repeatedly said, the law is a seamless web. That principle of law, that those policies and that handbook is not binding on the employee, conversely also indicates that policies and handbooks are not binding on the employer in terms of setting forth a contract. In fact, it's very clear that throughout their paperwork and throughout the intranet that they have disclaimers that nothing in here alters the employment at will relationship, and nothing herein requires someone to gives anyone any rights to a contract. And so,
Mr. Smith, how does the advent of the internet affect that case? I know that's an old case. We didn't have internet then. Certainly in our case we do, and that seems to be the crux of the attack on your position that there's no contract, which is that your client's attention was called to the section of the internet that contained information related to the arbitration requirements, and that that's where she was charged with the duty of reading what was in the policies and agreeing to them if she accepted employment.
Your Honor, certainly they can have policies that apply to the employment relationship, but that does not establish a contract. And that's the principle of FedEx versus Dutchman that that applies whether or not the internet is involved. One could argue that the Federal Arbitration Act requires an agreement to be in writing. Well, is the intranet or the internet writing as contemplated by the Federal Arbitration Act that was passed back during the Great Depression?
I strongly suspect they didn't have it in mind.
Yes. So the question then is, does the advent of the internet and all of the information thereon that overwhelms us change the principle that the employee policies and employee handbook don't establish a contract? Well, it's their own words that says it doesn't establish an enforceable contract throughout both their employee handbook and through their intranet. So they're stopped from arguing, well, it is a contract for purposes of the FAA. In fact, this very same issue was considered by Judge Fitzwater over in Dallas. It's Okeechobee versus Hospital Corporation of America, which is a related entity to North Hills Hospital. They have the 360 intranet that we have in this case. And in that case, Judge Fitzwater found that there was no notice given that was sufficient to establish notice of the arbitration. It did not constitute unequivocal notice. And that is the standard, that they have to show that they've provided unequivocal notice. I would submit to you that merely saying, hey, there's some stuff on the internet and you need to go look at it, constitutes unequivocal notice. There certainly was no presentation of this during the orientation. My client provided an affidavit that set forth that wasn't provided. They provided no information or no testimony or affidavit or evidence that showed that arbitration was discussed. And so the evidence is conclusive with regard to the fact that that issue was never discussed with the employees, including my client, when they signed on. We're dealing with an important right, and a right provided by the Seventh Amendment of the United States Constitution, as well as in several places in the Texas Constitution. And it is not unreasonable to, when waiving that important right that is part of our system of government and our system of resolving disputes, that is a fundamental right that the state has to have a compelling interest in which to take away, that we would require something more than just saying, well, there's something on the internet you can go look at. Furthermore, as
Mr. Smith, let me, before we go on to
yes, Your Honor.
Something else, I think Judge Fitzwater's opinion is good and clear. It seems to me your strongest case is the fact that there was a separate document to be signed which provided for agreement to arbitration.
I certainly think that makes
this. There was none signed by this party.
That's correct, Your Honor. I believe that there is case law, and we've cited it in the brief, that while an agreement to arbitrate can be in writing and does not have to be signed by the parties, there has to be an intent demonstrated, a meeting of the minds, that there is an agreement to arbitrate. Their own policy indicates that the meeting of the minds only occurs when the employee signs the agreement. There's a line for it.
Right.
And so we would assert, assuming arguendo, that there's notice, that under their own policy, There was no meeting of the minds sufficient to establish an agreement to arbitrate under the Federal Arbitration Act.
Because they had an agreement to be signed, and it was signed by other employees.
Yes, but not this one. I don't know that there's evidence in the record that other employees signed it. There's evidence in the record that it was, by its terms, required to be signed and not signed by my client. And again, the law is a seamless web. Dean Newton tells us that over and over. And what that means is, well, this decision is going to have implications on contractual relations between employees and employers in the future. For instance, too much of a hypothetical, what if the employer at North Hills had a policy that said on the intranet that said after 30 days, after you've worked here 30 days and we've provided you training, the employee shall pay the employer $5,000 as good consideration for completing the training program. But that's not discussed in the orientation. There's no paperwork that references that. It just says, well, you can look at the intranet and you're required to be familiar with that. Under what they're proposing, the employee would be required to pay the $5,000 because there's an agreement, because they refer to the fact that there is an arbitration, or they refer to the fact that there's a requirement for payment on the intranet. Certainly, that's not where we've gone, but that's where their position wants to take us. With regard to that holding of unequivocal notice, there's several cases that I think that the court needs to look at. The Dallas Court of Appeals opinion in Big Bass Towing versus Aiken. In that case, the employer said that the arbitration agreement was available for inspection by the employee, but the employer did not prove up that the employee knew that the arbitration clause was there. It might be a different analysis if they had something that my client signed that said, you are hereby bound to arbitrate any claim you have against the employer, and had her sign that in arbitration and then referred her to the intranet to review that. That might be sufficient to establish an agreement under the FAA. That was not the case here. Even if that was the case here, though, and she signed something that said she would be, you know, she would submit her claims to arbitration pursuant to the policy, you go to the policy and it requires her to sign it, to agree to her claims be submitted to arbitration. And that makes sense. After a claim arises, the employee can make a decision then, do I want to waive my constitutional right to go to court and go through a public proceeding? Or do I want to go through a arbitration proceeding, which by the rules of the AAA is confidential, that is not open to the public? And the Dallas Court of Appeals just recently, in the Courtney Cox versus Ace Cash Express case, or Ace Cash Express versus Courtney Cox, held that those confidentiality provisions don't violate the strong public policy behind open courts. So she could select that after the dispute arose. And that's, I would submit, what the policy provides, that arbitration is an option that she could pursue if she signs that agreement after the dispute arises. But we would submit that there is no evidence of unequivocal notice, and that even if there was evidence of unequivocal notice, there's no evidence that she signed their form that required an indication that there was an agreement to arbitrate. Unless the court has any other questions, I'll reserve my further arguments till.
I didn't quite get the significance of the AAA arbitration.
Under their policy, what I would submit their policy provides is after a dispute arises, after someone is subjected to sexual harassment or unlawful retaliation for reporting sexual harassment, under their policy, the employee has the option And that option can be exercised by signing the form.
Under AAA's policy?
Well, their policy provides that the arbitration, I'm sorry, the North Hills Hospital's policy provides that the arbitration will be governed pursuant to the AAA employment arbitration rules. And at that point, the employee, after the adverse action has occurred, can make the choice under their arbitration policy if they want to proceed with arbitration. My client wanted her day in court as guaranteed by the United States and Texas Constitution. And under their policy, in order to waive that, she had to actually sign that form that's in their policy. Unless there's anything else, we'd ask the court to reverse the court's decision to send this case to arbitration and allow this case to proceed in the 67th. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Smith. Ms. Patterson?
May it please the court, counsel. Good morning. As the court knows, Texas has a strong policy in favor of arbitration. We've cited to the court a number of cases that pronounce that policy and reiterate that policy, including cases from the Texas Supreme Court and several federal courts within the state of Texas. In this case, we had the obligation to establish two things, that there was notice and that the plaintiff accepted the policy. Let me address notice, and then I want to address what seems to me from the argument I just heard to be the crux of the appellant's argument, which is that there was some requirement that the policy be, or that the agreement be signed by its own terms, and that the appellant had some sort of an option. And I disagree with both of those things, and I think the record is clear. But as to the issue of notice, I think the record is extremely clear that notice was provided to the appellant based on a few things I'll point to you in the record. First of all, there is the Cynthia Dang affidavit, which was provided, which sets forth the notice that was provided, sets forth the facts related to the inclusion of the mandatory binding arbitration agreement in the intranet site that was available to all employees. Not only was that intranet site available to employees, as the record reflects at CR 43 and CR 44, the appellant signed an acknowledgement of her understanding of the existence of that employment, that Compliance 360 intranet site. The signed acknowledgement of policies at CR 44 specifically references notice of the Compliance 360 site, which Ms. Dang's affidavit, the hospital's affidavit, makes clear included the mandatory binding arbitration.
But it looks like that the acknowledgement of receipt of policies form just says, I understand that I can access additional policies. Doesn't require her to have reviewed any of them or to agree that she's on notice of the contents of them or anything of that sort.
I would agree with you on that point, Your Honor. I would say, though, that acknowledgement of receipt of policies at CR 44 also makes clear that all policies are important. She acknowledges that she understands that she can access those policies through Compliance 360s. And I would submit to you that a number of the other cases that the appellant relies upon, particularly in his reply brief, the Okocha case, the Goad case, and others, are distinguishable from this case, because in those other cases there was no signed acknowledgement by the plaintiff that they were given notice of this Compliance 360, given notice of the fact that there was an intranet site that contained other policies. And then I would also direct the court to CR 44, which is the other document she signed at the time of her orientation, which indicates that she acknowledges a responsibility to familiarize herself with the orientation manuals and the policies, including the problem-solving and grievance procedures, of which the mandatory binding arbitration policy is one. So in our view, these two documents, which she clearly signed, which she does not deny that she signed, and furthermore, she doesn't deny that she attended the orientation where she signed these policies, make it clear that she was given notice of the intranet site, make it clear that she understood an obligation to familiarize herself with relevant policies, and therefore we believe notice is clearly established. And we've cited the court to a number of cases that support, we believe, very strongly support our position on that, including the NRA Advanced Health PCS case, which is a Texas Supreme Court case from 2005, and a case from this very court, the Burlington Railroad versus Actpan case from 1996, which talks about the fact that the plaintiff in that case was provided access to the arbitration agreement, and the fact that the plaintiff failed to read or remember it, either by, and I'm quoting from the court, their own negligence or conscious choice, does not negate notice. In fact, notice is still established. We've also cited.
Where exactly is the arbitration agreement that you've attached as an exhibit, or the arbitration?
The arbitration policy.
Yes, ma'am.
It's in the record at CR.
No, I'm not talking about in the record. I'm talking about where exactly are the places that Ms. Doe could access that. Is it available only on the 360 intranet? Is it also part of written procedures that she was given? Is it published anywhere else besides the 360 intranet? That's my question.
I understand. For purposes of what's in the record is that it was available on the intranet, which is the Compliance 360, which she had access to at any computer terminal in the facility.
Okay, and is it a standalone policy, or was it part of a larger manual?
It's a standalone policy, and it is in the record at beginning at CR 35. You'll see an actual copy of the policy as it appeared on the Compliance 360 website.
Right. I believe you have that attached to your brief.
Yes.
As well. I was just wondering if that is the complete context of the policy, or if it was inserted in some other larger manual.
No. Now I won't go so far as to say it might not have been. It might have been available, and I believe it was. I just don't think this is in the record. It might have been available in another paper form if someone wanted to go to the Human Resources Department and that sort of thing. But for purposes of the record, because we were focusing on the fact that she had acknowledged receipt, that she'd acknowledged notice that this intranet existed, and that the intranet provides information on all of the applicable policies. But
how many policies are on the 360 intranet?
I honestly don't know the answer to that, Judge. I'm sure there are a number of policies, and I do know that the policies are separated by subject matter. So there are human resources policies. There would be clinical policies that would be applicable to nurses and things of that nature. But this one, as it is indicated in the document that you see in the record, is a human resources policy. But again, I would point the court to a number of cases we've cited, excuse me, at footnote 7 of our brief at page 14, which fall in line behind the In re Advanced Health case and the Rogers case, I'm sorry, in the Burlington case, including the Rogers Glass case. And I want to talk about that case in a moment because I think it's particularly important here. I'm not sure that there's any real debate from the appellant that continued employment, once notice is received, constitutes acceptance. And, of course, we've cited to the court a couple of Texas Supreme Court cases that establish that very clearly. I don't think that's a bone of contention at this point, but those are the In re Dallas Peterbilt case and the In re Dillard's case. I think the real bone of contention here seems to me, from the argument I heard, that there was some requirement by virtue of the language or the terms of the policy itself that it be signed. And I strongly disagree with that, and I think just taking a look at the policy itself.
I believe the argument was that there had to be a meeting of the minds, and a signature would be one way to show a meeting of the minds. And in the absence of a signature or something else on this particular policy, mm-hmm. what evidence is there to show a meeting of the minds?
Well, again, I think the evidence to show the meeting of what the case law requires is evidence of notice and evidence of acceptance. And notice, I believe we've established based on the authorities I just cited you to and the record documents I've just cited to you. Acceptance is the continued employment. And in terms of the signing, the In re Advanced Health case, again, a Texas Supreme Court case, makes it clear, and there are a number of cases cited in that opinion, that it is not necessary for an arbitration agreement to be signed to constitute a meeting of the minds or to constitute a valid and enforceable agreement. Furthermore, I strongly disagree with counsel's representation that this policy provided the appellant some option, and he used that term several times, some option to decide at a later date whether she wanted to choose to arbitrate any dispute that she might have. In fact, if you take a look at the policy itself, at page at record 40 through 41, which are pages 6 and 7 of the policy, it's very clear in bold letters, it says, in consideration of and as a material condition of the employment and the continuation of employment of the employee, as of the date this mandatory binding arbitration policy becomes effective. Well, the effective date of the policy by its own terms, which again was available to her, is January of 2006. Reading on, there is a form below that which allows an employee a written document upon which to submit a dispute once that dispute arises, if in fact it does arise. The very same argument that appellant is making in this case, that the policy itself envisioned or required some written agreement, was made in the Rogers Glass case, which is a case that we've cited in our brief out of the Southern District of Texas, 2015. It's an opinion by Judge Lee Rosenthal. And in that case, the same argument was made, and Judge Rosenthal found that that the policy itself does not require that it be signed, and in fact made that very clear in her, I had it open here a moment ago, in her discussion analysis, that the policy clearly by its own terms does not require a signature, that this was nothing more than a convenient form at the end of the policy to allow someone the opportunity to submit a dispute when it arises. I also want to quickly distinguish for the court a couple of other cases that counsel raised, because I think these are important distinctions. These are two cases that he discussed in his argument and that were raised in his reply brief. One is the Big Bass Towing case, which is a somewhat factually complicated case when you read it, but the bottom line in that case is that the court found that the arbitration agreement was a separate agreement from an occupational injury plan that the plaintiff had acknowledged receiving. So that case is completely distinguishable from this case because there were two separate agreements, one that there was no evidence that the plaintiff had received, and one that there was evidence that he received, but it did not make reference to the arbitration agreement. So I believe that case is very distinguishable on its facts. Furthermore, the Okocha case, which counsel has cited to, has facts very dissimilar to this one as well. That case, which is Judge Fitzwater's opinion, was a situation where the policy, the employee in that case had been employed by that facility before the mandatory binding arbitration policy was implemented. And so notice was provided by the hospital to existing employees about the implementation of this new policy in a number of different ways. The allegations were that there was an email sent to employees, that there were some town hall meetings. Very different than what we have here, where the policy was already in place. It was, according to the record, on the Compliance 360 website, and it was something that was discussed at the orientation. The other thing that's an important distinguishing fact between Okocha and the present case is that in Okocha, there's no signed document. There's no signature on any document by Mr. Okocha acknowledging that he received notice of the policy or that he received notice of the Compliance 360 website or the availability of policies to him on the internet. And in fact, he denied in that case that he had been given notice of any internet and claimed he didn't know anything about policies being on the internet or the website. That's distinguishable from here because, again, as we go back to the forms that we talked about earlier, the appellant in this case did sign these forms, which indicate, whether she remembers it or not, that she was provided notice of the availability of policies on the intranet. And I would, Justice Meyer, go back to your comment about how the intranet and the advent of the intranet plays into this case, and I think that's an important question. It is very typical these days for employers to have policies on the intranet in electronic form, as opposed to what they have done in years past where they handed employees big sets of employee handbooks and things of that nature. So we believe that the notice that was provided here, as evidenced by the documents that she signed, was more than adequate under the established case law. We believe that the cases cited by plaintiff in her reply brief in particular are clearly distinguishable on their facts. The Goad case also, there was no signed form by the plaintiff in that case notifying or indicating an understanding of the availability of policies. Yes, sir.
in regards to your position that the internet is a effective means of communicating to employees' policies of the company, what would you envision that we that should be a limit as to how much information about company policies and company activities and company relationship with employees can put on the internet and charge the employee with having knowledge of that and having acted according to that?
That's a terrific question. That's a very abstract question, but I understand what you're saying. I mean, I think there may be some limit, Justice Meyer, but in this case, this was a policy that was a very straightforward policy located with other human resources policies. I think prior to the advent of these electronic means of communications, policies like this were provided to employees in written form, and it is not unreasonable for an employer, I would submit, to expect employees to read and agree to abide by and understand policies that they're provided, whether they're provided them in electronic form or in written form.
So everything that would be found on the internet site under the 360, you would take the position that those things apply to the employment relationship in regards to this case and as in regards to any other employee of that fits this category of having been given notice that you could go read all the policies mm-hmm. and understand all of the relationships by going and reading on the internet.
Well, I think it goes a little bit further than that. Yes, but the other thing that is clear from the documents that the appellant signed here is that she was also advised that if she had questions or didn't understand certain policies, that she had avenues to
I guess the first question
support.
To the employee might be, do you know how to operate the internet?
Yes, I think so. But there were mechanisms for her to get assistance. And in fact, the documents that she signed, which she clearly read and signed, advised her that if she needed help or had questions, where to go, specifically where to go to human resources and other places. So if someone, for example, didn't know how to use an intranet site, they were in writing given instructions as to what to do to get guidance on that.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Patterson.
Yes, sir.
I'm a little bit bothered by you talk about what she's agreed to.
Yes, sir.
And HCA has this mandatory binding arbitration mm-hmm. policy.
Yes, sir.
That clearly provides this is what you're agreeing to, sign this. And that doesn't exist in this case, does it?
I don't agree, Your Honor, respectfully, that the policy requires her to sign it. The policy says that it's...
What is the purpose of that form?
The purpose of that form is to provide the employee a form so that when a dispute arises during their employment, so if they are terminated or they are suspended or they have some other disciplinary action that they want to make the employer aware, I want to submit this dispute to arbitration, that allows them to submit the dispute, to write it down and submit it. It's simply a mechanism for them to essentially file the dispute with their employer.
That's not designed to get the employee's agreement?
No, Your
Honor. Binding arbitration?
No, Your Honor. In fact...
What did she sign?
She signed, first of all, she doesn't have to sign anything under Texas law to agree to arbitrate. All she has to receive is notice and continue her employment, which denotes her acceptance of the agreement. What she signed in this case were the two documents I referred to earlier at the time of her orientation, which provided notice that she was aware that this policy existed. But she wasn't required under the law.
The support that was presented to her in the orientation mm-hmm. came not necessarily from one who was there, but one who participated in other orientations. Is that correct?
Well, the affidavit of Ms. Dang, who was the Vice President of Human Resources at the time, the real crux of her affidavit was that the policy, the mandatory binding arbitration policy, resides on the Compliance 360 intranet site. And then we go from that to the actual document that the appellant signed, which makes clear that she did go to orientation and she was made aware of that site because that's what the form says.
So it seems to me your argument is because of something she may have or should have heard in orientation, she has agreed to binding arbitration, and therefore don't have her sign an agreement to binding arbitration.
And again, I would...
It seems far-fetched to me.
And respectfully, I would direct the court to the various cases that we've cited in our brief, including those at footnote 7 and the other cases in the body of the brief, NRA Advanced PCS Health, and the Burlington case from this very court, which make it very clear that an employee does not have to sign a document in order to agree to arbitration. They just have to be provided notice, which we believe is very clear here based on those cases, and then their continuation of employment after that notice constitutes their acceptance and therefore the formation of the enforceable agreement.
Thank you.
I have one final question. Once Ms. Doe contested notice, is it your burden to prove notice?
I believe it is our burden to prove notice, yes. And I believe we clearly have under the cases as I've cited. And again, there's a long line of cases in this regard that we believe support us. Thank you. Yes.
When would there ever be a fact question if this is clearly proven?
I don't know. I'm not sure when there would be one. I mean, I think in this case there is not one because we have a clear record of her having been to the orientation and having signed these documents where she acknowledged having been advised of the existence of policies and where they were. I guess a fact issue I think a fact issue was raised in some of these other cases that the plaintiff cited. For example, the Okocha case where he says he never even knew about the internet site. He was never told about it, and there's no documentation indicating that he in fact was. In this case, we have documentation that she was, in fact, made aware of it because she signed that documentation. And there are similar fact issues, I think, in some of these other cases that counsel has cited, the Goad case, for example. But again, those cases are distinguishable because you basically had a he said, she said, without any kind of formal documentation, which we have here, where, again, the claimant here does not deny that she went to the orientation, doesn't deny that she signed these documents where she acknowledged being told about the existence of policies, including a grievance policy. She does not deny any of that. I mean, I assume if she denied that this was her signature, then we might have a fact question, but she doesn't deny that. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms.
Thank you very much.
If you would please add 2 minutes to Mr. Smith's time, in case you need that to respond to any of the additional questions we just asked.
Thank you. May it please the court. With regard to your question, Justice Bleil, the case law says under the Federal Arbitration Act, there's not a requirement. There can be an agreement without a signed agreement, but it has to be in writing. But that doesn't mean just because it's in writing that there's an agreement. And if their own policy provides that the employee has to sign in order to access the arbitration policy, then there's no agreement until the employee signs it. If you look at Clerk's Record 40, 41, and 42, it starts with a document that is mandatory binding arbitration agreement. And then it sets forth the different things. And then on page Clerk's Record 42, there's a line where it says print the name and then sign. That and above it, that's where the employee says that they agree to submit their claims to arbitration. That's where they said and it says on 41, the employee agrees to have the type of claim described in the procedures finally adjudicated. That's where the employee agrees under their own policy. And the record shows, from the totality of the record, it shows that there's not an unequivocal notice. If you look at Clerk's Record 43, 44, and 45, well, they talk about human resources policies. They talk about dress code, progressive discipline, non-discrimination, sexual harassment, employee rights, problem solving, payroll, benefits overview, cultural diversity, they go over with some other folks, employee reward and recognition form, RN demographic form, W-4, I-9 documentation. On none of these documents does it reference anything about their arbitration policy. So I would suggest that their own documents that they had my client sign indicate that there's no indication to agree. That they have this intranet policy that says, well, you can have an arbitration, but you have to sign it. Under the FAA, if their own policy requires you to sign it in order to have an agreement, then they're required to sign it. And in fact, they could take the position, well, she didn't sign the arbitration agreement, so we want our day in court under this provision.
Mr. Smith, is there any evidence in the record concerning how the 360 intranet was organized?
No. All they said was it was on the 360 intranet. There is not, unfortunately, evidence that documents what types of documents are on the intranet other than in...
Or how many, or in what order, or how they apply to what employees.
Correct.
Or what types of employees.
That was not brought forward by the employer in this case. All right. So we would urge the court to look at clerk's record 40, 41, 42 that shows that there wasn't an agreement to arbitrate. And then also look at 43, 44, and 45, clerk's records 43, 44, and 45, that show that they weren't trying to give her clear and unequivocal notice. They gave her clear and unequivocal notice of the progressive discipline policy and the sexual harassment policy and the requirement that you sign an I-9 in these documents, but there's no reference at all to the arbitration. And I would submit they wanted to give unequivocal notice of these things, but they didn't want to give unequivocal notice of the arbitration agreement because by its own terms, they knew it wasn't binding until she signed it. So we would ask the court to reverse the judgment of the trial court and remand the case for trial.
Smith.
Yes, sir.
The concept that a meeting of the minds is not shown by the evidence in this case seems to butt up against the argument made by your opponent that once they give notice, all that's required in terms of the employee accepting everything that they've been given notice about is to continue employment. That's their position. She continued employment, and therefore we gave her notice about all of these things on the Compliance 360, and all of that applies to her employment, and when she goes to work and gets a check, then she's agreed.
Assuming arguendo that they provided unequivocal notice under their own policy, if their own policy had said you have to submit every claim to arbitration and didn't have a form for which the employee had to sign, assuming those two variables, those distinctions, I think, would make it enforceable if they had evidence of unequivocal notice. I'm assuming that arguendo for your question. I dispute that because they gave notice of all the other things. But even if they had given unequivocal notice, if their policy hadn't required her and provided that she sign it in order to submit the claims, I think that under the FAA it could be enforceable. But they chose to include that form and require the employee to sign, and thereby signifying their agreement. And that's why there's not a meeting of the minds, because they set forth the method to have the meeting of the minds, and that was not met in this case.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you, counsel, for your argument today and your briefing. It's been very helpful to the court. Your case is submitted, and you are free to go about your business, and we will remain here while the next argument lawyers move forward.
Thank you.